This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
Let's just say for a moment that one of the main inspirations of producing this meeting is to learn from each other, is to share our practices, is to share the problematics we are engaging in each of our geographies, and so on. I've been thinking a lot about this, and I continue to say that we can learn a lot from the Global South, and that probably in Latin America, in the last years, it's been the epicenter of progressive thinking about infrastructure, about governance, about producing a new politics of engagement with communities, and so on. And for me, it has been an incredible experience and kind of inspiration to really get to know a bit some of the projects that have emerged from Brazil all the way to Colombia, to particular Medellin with Sergio's project. I've been inspired a lot by what Oscar Romo is doing locally and engaging natural reserve and informal community and negotiating with these governments a different way of imagining the border, less driven by administrative boundaries and more by the logic of natural and social systems and so on. So let's talk a bit about how, you know, some of the main experiences that we can share. Somebody just said right now from the Associated Press right here when we were just talking, he said, oh, so you are crossing the border tomorrow in the opposite direction? Usually people come to the north. We're going now south. And I think it's very emblematic because I think this Latin America, or I would say loosely speaking, because those categories are not relevant anymore, but the third world can teach the first in terms of social and environmental sustainability, I think. And that's probably the most fantastic inspiration for this meeting. So can we begin maybe with you, Sergio, just sharing a bit, just a couple of reflections about what you've been able to accomplish is an incredible legacy. What is behind that transformation of the political in
Medellin? Thank you, Teddy. And I come here, and through the years, I am more and more prouder to be Latin American. And I now perfectly understand what you say about many new things coming from Latin America. We are solving different problems. We are a creative group of people. We have lived through different experiences. And it's wonderful to see how what we have been learning, actually, it has value worldwide. So for me, it's an honor to be here as the former mayor of Medellin to share with you what we have learned. That we learned it by doing it ourselves. Of course, we learned from many other places at some place, but we came up with our own solutions to problems that we are still working on. Now, I come from Medellin, and I come from a non-standard path. I am a mathematician. I wasn't involved with politics at all. I studied in the United States at the University of Wisconsin in Madison, where I got a PhD in mathematics. And science has been my life. But 11 and a half years ago, with a group of people, we said something that you understand very well. We are tired of saying how things should be done, because we have nothing to do with, we get as far as saying, this would be very good. But our politicians are the ones who decide and take the important decisions. So in our case, what we did was, we cannot die saying how things should be done. We are going to get into politics, we are going to get into power, and once into power, we are going to do what we have been saying that should be done. And that has been my path, a non-standard path. I never thought I would be a mayor of Medellin or governor of Antioquia, president of Colombia, or go all over the world talking about what we have learned. But that's the important thing. We had a dream. That's a very famous phrase, but we had a dream. We have ideals. We had perfectly clear what we wanted in society. And we got into power, and once we got into power, we said, now we're going to do it. And that's what we did. And
may I ask you something?
Sure.
So you made the conscious decision of being in power?
Right. We said, I have spent a lot of time in my life trying to improve society, to collaborate, to give ideas, to be part of the transformation, but we didn't like politics. We associated politics, traditional politics, with corruption. They will never deliver what they will say, which is the image of politicians. But we were interested in society, so we were worried about the problems, but we didn't like politics. And now, as older as we were 11 years and a half ago, we said, we have to get into politics. Whether we like it or not, that's where we have to go. And we got into politics. And we got into politics in order to get into power. And we did everything to get into power, and we got into power, working our way through an unknown path to us. I haven't been in any campaign of anything whatsoever, but we got there, and we did what we have dreamed. We didn't finish, of course. This is a very complex problem, but we had it clear. We knew. We get into power. Then once we are in power, we know what problems we want to solve. Three problems. Social inequality at the individual level and at the land level, the territory. Violence and the culture of illegality, where corruption is a chapter of the culture of illegality. We knew that we had to work on those three problems, and we began solving the problems. But something that is very important, and that has to do with what you are doing here, is the way you get into power is crucial to what, with respect to what you will do later. Because usually people think, okay, this guy got into power, and then we go and talk to the guy so that they will do what we have been working on. That's what I spent my life doing. We will go to a mayor, a governor, or the minister. Please, science and technology is very important. We have a project. And said, oh, sure, you are. Guys, you are really smart. Sounds great.
You can record, yeah.
But they would never do it. Or if they did something, say, well, we have some money that we can give you, or there is an NGO somewhere in Holland that will come up with $23,000 to the project. Said that I mean, we could do something, but that wasn't it. They said we have to go for the whole thing. So, and the crucial thing, and the way we did it, and this is a reflection afterwards. It wasn't that we had all this clear in our mind, so that because we didn't know what to do, but we had a good intuition. We had a clearly set our principles. We knew what we wanted. We knew what we disliked from politics, and so we built our own path. But to finish, the first thing that you do, or that we did, excuse me, was we got to put the city in our skin. I walked through Medellin. Medellin is a 2.5 million people with mountains and everything. I walked through all the neighborhoods in Medellin. I never done that before. But that way, I could smell the city. I could understand the corners. I could see how people live like. And it was a very, very powerful experience. I knew where I was. And actually, we did it with some people, but I wasn't with an army behind me, carrying me, taking care of me everywhere. No, I was. We did it by ourselves, door to door. We handed out a leaflet, and I learned about this. So I said, we had it in the skin. We smelled it. We saw it. We heard everything we had in our senses. Then we had it in our heart. We loved it. And we loved what we were doing, and we love what we are doing. And that's a necessary condition. This wasn't a project designed so that I would get to mayor. It wasn't that wasn't part of my life, but we loved that city everywhere. And once we get to know the whole thing, I loved it even more. I cannot love Medellin anymore because it's not possible, but I have it in my... And then we had it, and I would say, in my brain, we studied it. We knew it, we loved it, and we studied it carefully with people who knew about all these things. And once we put all those things together, we got into power and said, now we are going to do this, but we know where we were. We know how to relate to people. We inspire love for the city that inspire people, and we have the knowledge. And that's the story. So you know perfectly where we are, and you have studied. Teddy has studied the whole thing all his life, and they tell him he has all the ideas. What you need is, or either you go to Colombia to work with me, or we have to get a group here who will perfectly understand what you do to do it.
Yes.
What about support? Because all that costs a lot of money, and you probably need the support of some important members of society to make it happen. How did you capture it?
Okay. At the beginning, we were just a small group of people, and I said the following. We didn't have money.
Intellectuals? Mostly
intellectuals from the academic world, from NGOs, the cultural sector, some businessmen, but very few.
How small?
50.
50 people.
50 people.
Right.
And I was the leader. But I said, nobody has ever been charged for walking. I can't walk. The leaflets are very cheap. We drink water and drink coffee. And basically, that's it. We always said, never ask about money at the beginning. If you want to do it, we will do it. Whatever way, we are going to do it. And we wanted to do it. I'm a sort of embarrassed saying this, but I was the leader of the thing. I said, there's nothing is going to stop us. And we did it. Now, as long as we were moving on, people started looking at us and looking at us and look at these guys. The first poll, Pajardo, my name, 0%. It's a retired, you're a smart guy. If you're a mathematician, everyone, if you tell anyone you are a mathematician, say, oh, this guy is very intelligent. Just by saying that you are a mathematician, it helps.
It does.
Yeah. And people will tell me, oh, you are so smart. You can do other things. I mean, I had my life organized as a university professor. I had a tenure position. I knew how if I wanted, I could have died. And I knew how I would continue for the rest of my life. But I didn't want that. So we began doing it. And as long as you do things, people see that you insist, persist, discipline. With this love that we have, with this, we were always happy in the streets. We will transfer that to people. Hope. We build hope. So, and little by little, people will get to us. Will get to us. But we had, the crucial thing was, we wanted to do it. And if you read the story of a famous artist or a singer or so, you, at the beginning, they had nothing. They had to go through a lot of problems. But they persisted because they had it inside.
Even though we know, of course, many of the successful, amazing projects that have emerged, you know, from Latin America, and Sergio's being one of the most interesting ones in my mind, all of those projects have been informed by a process, you know, of course, that you are beginning to talk about. And
right.
This is a more, how would I call it, spiritual dimension, because mm-hmm. it's really about vision, it's about leadership and so on. But at some point, there were very specific political moves and very specific processes that you began to enable. I remember, because I've heard you many times, that at some point you said you wanted to get to power because you wanted to engage. You did not want to be a politician. You wanted to construct a new politics.
Exactly.
And in that sense, I remember two things that you said. One, when you arrived to the mayor's office, you said, we are going to shift the paradigm. We are going to not build here, but we are going to build there. So that in
right.
itself, meaning the marginal communities.
Because we had walked the city. We knew where people's needs were. So, and we didn't have a political negotiation so that it was, okay, you supported me, then I have to do this for you. Said, we know the city. This has to be there because that's what has... Now, we knew what we were going to build, and we knew why these things were going to build there. It wasn't that there were some architects that would come and tell us, do this thing here. No, it's part of the political project. We knew where we had to go. But it was crucial that I had been through those places. So I knew them. I knew what it meant. We could dream things. And being leaders, something, Terry, I stopped you, but being a leader means that you will do some things that the community could not foresee. Because usually we work with the community and people participated. But there are many things that the community could never imagine. For example, when we built these wonderful park libraries, if we had had a poll with the community and asked, do you want to have a park library? They would have said no. So we have to know what it means. You have to know the whole picture and say, we are going to do this. We brought people to participate in it. And then today, in every single barrio in Medellin, they want to have one of those, but they had never seen it before. But we knew where it had to be.
Fantastic.
Which is what you said.
Oscar, any
No, this, I mean, it's true that people recognize talents, but as far as perhaps not committing to you too much, like in my case, I'm persistent, but I haven't gone farther because I'm not a politician, and of course, the politics of creating a city are very profitable. So the powers wants to maintain their control, and they have allowed me to work on these communities. I created a master plan for based on not administrative boundaries but natural boundaries, and that was the basis to start creating a new way of understanding the city. But they were afraid of that continue the growth, and I've been stopped by developers, and I told you the story about the origins of the money and the power. So they were afraid. They were afraid of losing control of the development of the city, because they're always ahead of the game. There's a planning institute that only serves the purposes of these individuals, these rich individuals. So I was challenging the urban design of the city. I was challenging the law, because I created a new law. I was challenging the rich people about their perceptions on how to create a city. And I forced them to go so far. But now they're very reluctant about continuing supporting these ideas because they see the consequences of that. People are not happier. People are not buying products because they can collect trash and build something. And so instead of buying bricks, they're collecting trash. And that's dangerous. They kind of see like, well, if this grows too much, then what is going to happen with my business or with the land I'm investing on, or how the city would react to a different opportunity to grow. Because mine is actually so bad that nobody likes it, but they don't have a choice. Like these houses that they built, pretty small houses, we call them pichoneras. Mm-hmm. There's room for a bed and a TV and perhaps a little bit of furniture, but nothing else. And that's legal. The developers can build this very small house called pie de casa, but there's no room to grow. And people are forced to live there. It's already impacting the city with the social consequences of being
packed.
Yeah, packed. There's no parks. The roads are tiny. Everybody needs a car. There's no way to park your car. That creates conflict with your neighbor. And they're expensive, really expensive. But that's kind of the only choice. And an alternative is pretty dangerous for them. So
one of the most amazing conceptual sort of projects that Oscar has been pushing is the idea that this informal settlement on the Mexico side could be the protector of the estuary on the U.S. side. That there is something about the sort of socioeconomic and how would I call it, creative entrepreneurship embedded in this environment that could be enabled to allow us to rethink the meaning of infrastructure in terms of the environmental, you know, dimension, but also in terms of a new politics. Part of what Oscar has been doing, as he said, is to produce a new, how would I call it, law, a kind of public trust.
It's a public law and a public trust and a council. What I created allow people now to, every quarter, to meet and discuss projects, and all the government agencies have to now, because there's a law, they have to follow those rules. And the rules were created by the residents. So the agencies are afraid of them, because if they come and decide to build this road or to build this bridge or any type of infrastructure, it has to go through this process of inviting the neighbors to discuss it and to review the funding. And in some cases, those projects cannot go. And it's pretty easy to expand on that, but of course, we perhaps need to become politicians and gain.
And you know what is amazing is, again, I'm just trying to get to the ideas that can be harvested, you know, mm-hmm. from these, that can influence a way of transforming certain political protocols from top down that are conventional. One of the most amazing gestures through Oscar's research and work in this informal settlement has been to suggest that a microbasin, like a microcuenca, mm-hmm. can be a way of defining neighborhood. Not just the jurisdictional arbitrary boundary set up by some kind of politician, but in fact the natural boundaries can begin to delineate a way of organizing community for a moment. I mean,
something interesting. Right now I'm running for governor of Antioquia. Antioquia is sort of the California in Colombia. Medellin is the second city in Colombia. It's the capital of Antioquia, mm-hmm. where I was the mayor. When we moved to Antioquia, we have 125 municipalities. All of them are municipalities, even though there are some with 10,000 inhabitants. Medellin has 2.5 million. And so
within Medellin?
Within Medellin. And then there is a metropolitan area, which is getting closer to 4 million, with 10 municipalities. Uh-huh. Now, when I studied the whole state now, we have some the most important rivers in Colombia go through Antioquia. Mm. Rio Magdalena, Rio Cauca, and Rio Atrato. And we have plenty of water, creeks, and all sorts of things, smaller rivers. Politically, the department has been divided in municipalities, but we are finding out what you are saying right now, that the political division doesn't adjust to what nature has done. So we have to understand development not with the traditional political division, but exactly what you're doing here. You say make micro basin. We have to look at the region determined by the rivers, by the basins, not the micro. These are big ones, which take into account nature, the way things are ubicated. So it's exactly, we are finding that these traditional limits, even though within the same state, same country, but there are some political limits that don't have to be taken into account when we think of development, and that's exactly what you're doing here, if I understand well.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's not just because a natural boundary redefines the concept of urbanization that makes things easier, but also cheaper. It's easier to move water or traffic or people within a boundary than to start crossing boundaries, natural boundaries, to move, for example, water. It's very expensive to take the water from here, pump it up at this high, and then releasing it in another watershed. And then the sewer, you take the sewer here and you transport it to another watershed. So it's very expensive, it's inefficient, creates a lot of problems. While if everything flows like water, it's even traffic, it's a lot easier, a lot cheaper, natural. You can reach places faster.
There's something that is very interesting I've been thinking about. I was the mayor of Medellin, and Medellin has a periphery. Is that correct in English? Periphery? Okay. And many people would come to Medellin, this place, by either violence somewhere in the countryside, or by economical needs. People from the countryside, these small towns, would come to Medellin. Medellin has a river who goes through the middle of the city. So they will come to the highest part of town, up in the mountains, with settlements that are barely, very poorly equipped to withstand nature. For example, with those rains, many of these collapse and things like that. Now, if I think now of Antioquia, there are some regions that are also the periphery of the state. And here people come from the central part of Antioquia where the mountains are, but people from other states. So we get a communities here which are very different, with a mixture of people from all over the place. The same thing happens with Colombia. If you look at Colombia, then Colombia, you will see in the periphery people from different parts. Now I'm understanding this much better. And the problem is very serious, and I'm sure, without being there, that what happens in Tijuana here, when you talk about there's a river that divides you, or this is the line that divides San Diego and Tijuana. I'm sure that all these informal settlements here are poor people, to begin with, but many people that come from different parts. They are not homogeneous. They don't have a culture. And if they are living here, across here, that should be a real something weird, in the sense that this is a population that lives on both sides. They are poor from here. They are very rich on this side just by crossing. This thing here has to be understood very well with respect to what it means to have development for these people. Mm-hmm. That's quite a challenge, because when you have a mixture like that, it's more difficult to intervene. Usually, that happens in Medellin, in Antioquia, and in Colombia. All these people here come new, and they have a different way of seeing things. When they come and they are informally established, for them, there are no traditional rules. For example, when we get these people who came into the town, they built their shanty house, and then we are going to connect them to public services. For them, said, how come I'm going to pay for water? I mean, pay for water, me? But the water is here. So it's a different culture. It's here we all know that we have to do the public service, I mean, the utilities company every month and so on. But these guys come here with a very different culture. Understanding that to have development is quite a challenge. It requires, right, you have to know the city. You have to come up with different solutions, not the traditional ones that are usually thought.
And I think that at that point, there is one important issue that has been, again, of inspiration in what you do, but what it has happened in Latin America, a different process of engagement in terms of institutions and publics, mm-hmm, in terms of participatory processes to engage the communities themselves. And I think that that's something that I would love to talk a little more about, because in a place like this, which is similar, of course, to what you've been discussing in Medellin, but where there is a kind of impossibility, I mean, the kind of contradiction and controversy you are talking about, a place where on one hand you want to speak about community, which is about unity and relation, mm-hmm, and on the other you want to divide and you want to separate. I mean, how to reconcile those two conditions, a place that wants to let the flow, whether of water or the natural, social, or economic flow, at the same time how that flow collides with these stupid laws and jurisdictional systems. So these contradictions. But what is interesting is that it seems to me that what is needed is a different process of engaging of these communities. One, when people ask me what happened in Latin America, people who don't know very much about, you know, what, mm-hmm, the projects that have been going on, I always say one of the most amazing things about these projects is that these are the only projects in the world in the last 15, 20 years where governments at the municipal level were able to negotiate between the top down and the bottom up.
That's the point.
Yeah, exactly.
And so that depends on each place where you are working. I mean, there is not a formula for this, but what it remains is, how do we get to make the top and the bottom coincide in a common place where both things can happen? And that's the challenge. And there is I have no doubt about the importance of the participation of community. So how much participation, how that can be made to coincide or to work with government, that's quite a challenge. Usually governments don't like this, because this is trouble. Yep. When you have people talking, when you have people thinking, saying, oh, come on, I have to be in government for 3-4 years. I have to do this, and this guy is going to stop me. So they don't like this participation. What we did, and this I see now, it wasn't that we were doing it, and we had the when we walk and we got ourselves doing politics with people walking and all these things, came up the word that is the key to those, these things, trust. When this community trusted us, then we could work together. And that's what I always tell people. Our political capital is trust. And they tell me, how many votes do you have? I say, I have no idea. But you are a mathematician. You should know how many votes. I have no idea. But I go to the street and I see the people say, we have the trust of the people. And that's what they don't sell. Because with money, you can buy leaders and votes. In Latin America, it happens all over. I don't know if here in the United States. Oh, but in Latin America, they go with plenty of money and they buy the poor people. But we don't buy anyone. But the people trust us. And that's...
Any particular moment where when that boundary was crossed, when that trust was enabled, what happened? What was the gesture?
No.
What was?
I remember when we came to a place and we said, well, okay, here we are going to build a park library. We explained why. We always had a map. I always have a map around me. So because I tell people, you have to know where you stand. Traditional people don't know where they are. Many people doing technical work, they don't know exactly where they are. They talk about the regions, they talk about these things, but they cannot put in their minds the region that they are talking about. So we said we're going to do it here, and we had to buy 120 houses. Those were built informally many years ago. We had to buy them so that we will have this project in there. But nobody had seen the project. So we had a group of people who were outstanding working with community, people who understood community. And we took the care, the pain in the sense of explaining everything of it. I said, we don't have to run people over. We explain things. They are natural leaders of all sorts. And we explain, and people start paying attention. And you had to make an effort to explain to people in their language. Everyone understands. But you have to be a good teacher. You have to understand what's the language that they speak so that you can connect. So we had this incredible team, and we were explaining to everyone. We had to buy every single house. Every family in that house had to be resettled somewhere. Some of them said, but we are going to have to leave now when this wonderful thing comes to here. Which was, for them, was painful. When once they understood what was going to happen, they said, but I have to leave exactly at the time. That was a small group, but that's what it means, the common interest. Very small, 120 houses out of 2,000 houses or more. But we explained that carefully. The architects then began working with them. And people would go and draw their dreams and so on. There will be always a group of lawyers with a group of people saying, the guy, they are going to steal you. The lawyers will come and say, give me the permit to represent you so that we will negotiate. So they want to stop the whole thing. So we went through all these stages, but we took people into account. We didn't see them as an obstacle to our will. I said, okay, we have to work with them. Even though sometimes it's annoying because you have to sweat. But we took the time to sweat and discuss. But when we were doing that, then people were all committed to this project. It wasn't that we did something here. I said, hey, come here that we built this for you poor people. No. So they are very proud of this place. With the violence that we have had, there hasn't been a single violence act around the places that we built, because they were built by the community. And they were very proud. And that was crucial. But that requires a way of handling government. You have to be conscious that you are going to do that. If you are a mayor or a governor or a president said, this is what I'm going to do, and whatever is in there, I will do it, they can do it. I mean, you kick people out and so on, but you don't build something powerful. That's exactly the key.
What has been, well, the paradigm has been, let's say, generally speaking, in the last years, in terms of the main centers of economic power, let's say, to enable a system based on privatization. It's really about the private, about the individual. One of the most difficult things, I think, to achieve is to reinsert into the debate an idea of civic imagination, an idea of what you call common interest. You know, how to achieve that? I mean, that to me is one of the most... water here, for example, I keep thinking through your work, can water be a way of redefining citizenship, of redefining property, right? I think that, for me, one of the most amazing achievements in these projects in Latin America has been the provocation that any infrastructural intervention in the city begins with the awareness of a civic culture, that it is committed to this common interest. So what tools where you are mentioning some, what type of engagement is necessary?
Well, in our case, let me just add to what you said, that we have another layer that, of course, you don't have there, which is migrants from all over Latin America coming to Tijuana to live, and they don't have a voice, they're not well represented, they don't even have a permit to live in Mexico. But they become part of the decision-making process because they live there. And this periphery is very similar to what we have in Tijuana. The flat areas are occupied by the rich people because it's easier to build. And the hillsides, the unstable slopes, the creeks are populated by those migrants that don't know where to go to. And they mistakenly think that land is for free. So they go and build a little shack and that eventually become a house, a well-designed house. But if you're not Mexican and you're living there and you're asked to participate, you're shy. Because you might be kicked out of the country, not just of that house. So that layer of a complexity create a really interesting thing, because then they kind of find a way to participate that doesn't harm them. And what you just said, they deposit their trust in somebody who doesn't represent the powers, so they can be represented by that group of individuals that they're not corrupt, they're not trying to, well, use them to vote for a political party. So perhaps I've been thinking about this idea of using politics to move these projects up, because so far, what we've done was seen as an experiment.
I understand.
They all got interested. Actually, the Municipal Planning Institute got recognized for allowing that to happen. And the city of Tijuana got some money from the federal government to support that, because the federal government saw it as an interesting experiment. But now it has to be not just an experiment, but a public policy.
That's why I'm here. Because you had pilot cases, an experiment, it works. But the only way to move from that stage to something wider is politics.
Right.
And that's why I have to say, with all the love that I have for mathematics, the university life, which I love, let me interrupt for a second and say, when I get older, I would like to be a university rector and university president. After being through all this, I would like to go back to my place. But I had to give up my mathematics, my silence life, my students, my research, going through the world, but talking about theorems. Now I don't talk about theorems, I talk about these things. But that's why I'm here. So we have to go from experimental case.
Isn't that interesting? Because at the end of the day, many of the people in the conference, because you know, I teach in the visual arts department and I'm constantly straddling between art and architecture, urbanism. Many artists are afraid of politics. I mean, they want to maintain themselves a bit separate from what has been understood as the political. when in reality the only way to really get to scaling, to scale up, right, these experimental projects is to enter into that realm. But of course, it's not to say that everybody has to become a mayor, but how to engage the political as a project is
that's
something
a challenge. That, quite a challenge. Look, right now we are facing new challenges in politics. 11 years ago, I was something unknown in Medellin. I have always worn jeans like this. I've been, since I was at the university, I've been dressing exactly the same way, with a little more hair than you. But and then we were new. We defied establishment in the sense that we did politics in a different way, as I explained. Now we have won twice. So people say, well, now are they going to become like the older ones? How we keep that civic spirit, that passion, that feeling that is not the same. Actually, within the political debate, they try to say, well, they are, Fajardo now is like the others. And we keep walking. We say, our main quarters are the streets and so on. But after all this year, we have enemies. They have seen the power. Once we get this going, it's very powerful. The problem is how you get it going. And that's when you have the leaders that, and that's the magic of life. Say, something happens and we got to, why we succeeded and why other people who had been as good or better than us in many things, they didn't do it. That's what makes life interesting, actually. Right. Not that you can follow a formula and you will have a step up, but that's the point. And it's difficult. The powers are the powers. They don't want
changes.
At the beginning, they wouldn't dare. I mean, they wouldn't care about it. They said, let's not even mention it. And we keep walking. And we kept walking. And they said, well, those are a curiosity. And then they will say, oh, you're nice. And now we are the enemies. But when they realized that, we were already in power. Because we continue moving. And now we have learned to work with other people. There are good people in all political parties, decent people that you can work with. So hurry up, Oscar and Teddy, line up here.
Good.
You know, we did something that perhaps is the basis for what you did. Everything that we have done is based on science. Because every decision, every project, even the political component has its science-based decision-making process. And so there are no mistakes made in terms of what is best for the city, for the community. And yet, perhaps we can have champions that would look at that as, well, this is best, so why don't we support this? But we fail in capturing those champions that might be willing to transform the city and the region into a much better area by allowing this to happen. Because
that's right.
Yeah, everything is status quo. Nothing has changed in many years. And people are eager for a change.
I'm sure many politicians approach you and say, well, how are we going to, before elections, say, well, how are we going to make sure that these guys vote for them? But they just see them as votes, as people that they have to buy so that they get the support, but that's not their life.
Right.
That's the difference. When I have walked through these places, I come from a privileged sector of society in my hometown. My father was an architect, and he's an architect. He's still alive. I went to a very good private school, then I went to university, came here to have a PhD, and so on. So I would represent, but I would never represent that way of life. I was from the academic world, and then I've been through all these places. And it's very funny because people in the street would tell me, this is the humblest person I have ever seen. And many of the guys from here said, oh, this is very arrogant. And I enjoy very much showing people that we can work together. And I have become an intersection point from different sectors of society. That's what we need, many leaders that can talk to one side or to the other and have the trust. So that we could say, and that's what we did in Medellin, because we did all these wonderful things in the poorest sector, and we said the most beautiful thing for the humblest people. and it was part of our political project, and nobody complained. But we, because we explained that all what we did here was, was better for everyone in society. Because people said, what are you going to do for me? And we said, we are going to do this for all. And if we improve this, everyone is going to be much better off. But that you need politics.
Yeah. A couple of maybe thoughts before we end. But one is, I've been arguing from the standpoint of art, architecture, humanities. I mean, I know you come from mathematics. Oscar, you mentioned the scientific model, yes, as a scientist. I've been arguing that artists could be enabled, could be part of the transformation, the political transformation, that at the basis, whether it is a scientific or not model, there is a way that you've been conceptualizing these relationships. In other words, I could say you are a designer of politics and economics. I'm interested to say to my field, okay, that architects, besides designing buildings, can contribute with the designing of political and economic frameworks. I imagine you, as a mayor in your office in Medellin, with a big map, as you are saying, but you are producing diagrams where you say, what if we do this? What if we, the idea that the library parks begin to create an interesting hybrid of public space and knowledge.
Right.
There is a series of strategic moves. You are a conceptualist. You are really designing a new series of interfaces, not only across institutions, but in the very nature of how to intervene.
That's correct.
So that to me is an interesting enabling possibility.
I have no doubt architects have to learn to read and feel the soul of people. And once we get into that's where we can do things. I wasn't elected because I was a mathematician. And mathematics never trained me in principle to be a city mayor, but getting in touch with people, that's what I said. You have to read to have the city in the senses and here, and then you can contribute. And the way architects understand that is crucial. It's crucial so that things would work. And that's something wonderful that we managed to do. And for our architects in the group, it was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to all what you were thinking, doing, get put into political terms. They went to the territory, they felt it there, and they saw it blossom. But so I have no doubt that that's crucial to being able to be part of society. And so don't give up.
Yeah, but you were designing, right? You were conceptualizing, you were strategizing and construct. This is at least this is what I'm thinking that I would love to do in the next 2-3 years through this Center for Urban Ecologies at UCSD where I teach, is projects that visualize the complexity of these processes. I would love to spend a week or two with you in Medellin, just picking your brain and just telling the story so I can get a sense and share the procedures by which you reinvented many things. And so that needs to be visualized, I think, in a sense. So that's the reason I was asking. But the other thing that you also mentioned is that we need more and more mediating agencies that, just like Casa Familiar here, they are trying to be mediators and facilitators between government and community. Mm-hmm. We need more people that produce the interface and enable a conversation, I think. And that's another aspect that you were saying, is how to bring these different worlds together, in terms of producing a new conversation. Oscar here, by the way, has been probably the single character that negotiates between San Diego and Tijuana's leaders in bringing levels of awareness about this issue. So, that's another aspect of leadership, I imagine, is to be able to produce a different conversation across the state.
Oscar as mayor of Tijuana.
Well, that exactly needs to happen, and he keeps resisting. So.
Well, I'm resisting politics, but now
used to do it, and I hated it. But I was thinking, how can I improve society? So I would write newspaper columns. I would member of all possible committees talking about science and education.
Esta es Jamaica, que es este de
hibiscus.
De,
no sé, de flor de Jamaica, ¿la conoces?
Flor de Jamaica. Well, so I think, maybe, I don't know, can I just move one last thing?
Let me just quickly answer your question about the aesthetics. And that's another reason why I think it's important to play with nature, because you open up opportunities to create beautiful spaces, comfortable spaces. You could have people happier living in a community that plays the role of bringing the values of the landscape. And that's precisely why we decided, well, let's try to use these natural boundaries as part of the design of a new city. Because then you can bring the water, you can bring every component that was part of this landscape that is scarce, but it's beautiful. And it's been lost.
I have been, every day I learn something, and that's why I enjoy this work. Because it's like being a scientist. And now that I think about it, I look back at what we learned and I say, well, look, we need public space. Public space is that piece of land where we are all the same. If we walk out to this sidewalk, it could be the richest person in the world and you, and you're the same down there. Yeah. Afterwards, many things can happen, but right in front, we are the same. You have nothing that will make you different from me. Now, and there are these projects where you can build all these interventions. But now I think of the following. And that makes you happier. Your life is better. You may live in a very tiny room, but outside you can have many things that you don't have, and that makes my life much better. That's public space. We may be tight, but outside there is a park. There's all these things, facilities that enrich your life. But I think it's crucial. And I have never thought of what I'm saying right now in the way I'm saying it. But every public space should be designed thinking of building opportunities for people. Not only being happier, but building opportunities. I don't know if they can fish here. I don't know what they can do. This is a touristic place or something, but you have to build opportunities. That's what we did. All what we built had to do with opportunities. But don't forget to build something that had to do with opportunities. Wonderful, beautiful public space. But that's a touristic house there. There is a place where people can learn how to fish, and then they will be prepared for something. Something. Always put opportunity there so that they can develop their talent. The message from all the things that we did was talent can be developed. Public space is crucial because it's public, it's everyone's taxes there, but the message is you're happier, but you have a talent that can develop. Don't forget that part. Always, whatever, find something that is related to that.